Okay, we left off last week on Daf Samach Vav Amud Aleph. And I want to finish up one little piece in our Gemara. And then after we're done with that, I want to then turn our attention to the new topic, which is very much Halacha Lamaisa, which is the question of Recha Milsa. The question of what is the status of the smell of foods in ovens, which, translated to real terms, I don't care whether you can smell it or not, but rather, when you cook something in an oven that is milchix, that is fleishix, that is treif, what is the impact upon the oven at that time is what the Gemara discusses in the immediate future, and then obviously for us it has ramifications. I don't think anybody, generally speaking, cooks milk and meat in the oven at the same time. I think generally people keep a kosher kitchen don't do that. Technically speaking, it's possible that under certain circumstances it is mutter, in fact, but we don't do that. It's much more of a question of having one oven and using it for milk and using it for meat, and what do you have to do with anything of that. So first let's start with the Gemara.
Can you distinguish between an oven and a microwave oven?
Let's first start with their ovens. At some point we could talk about microwaves as well. So the Gemara that we were up to is on Daf Samach Vavam and Aleph, and we had just discussed last week the following machlokas. If I have substance A that gets mixed into substance B, A is Isser, B is Heter. It's agreed upon that Lamasa, you'll need to have at least Shishim, 60 times in substance B, keneged substance A. That's clear. However, there are circumstances where you require more than just B, B being 60, but sometimes more than that. Sometimes 100, sometimes 200, sometimes nothing will work. And the distinction that's drawn between when shishim is sufficient versus when you need something more, or maybe nothing is enough, is whether it is min b'she'eno mino or min b'mino. When you're dealing with a mixture of two things that are considered the same min, so then shishim may not be sufficient. Certainly it's clear that when you talk about orla and kiloya kerem, you need 200 times. When you talk about truma, you need 100 times. When you're talking about tevel and yayin nesach, nothing is sufficient to be mevatel if it's min b'mino. Whereas, if it's min b'she'eno mino, so then it's sufficient if you have shishim. So what was the issue that we were discussing? So there was a machlokas, Abaye and Rava, as to how to define min b'mino. Abaye said min b'mino is defined the way we normally define min b'mino, which is taste. And that has ramifications. I said last week that this requirement of more than shishim is midrabanan. But there are situations where the shear of bittul is actually min ha-Torah. And under those circumstances, it's clear, outside of one funny Ramah, that the way we define min b'mino is by taste. So Abaye, I mean, he's not referencing that, but Abaye assumes that the definition of min b'mino here, for the din rabbanon of requiring mea, masayim, or infinity, or no bittul, is defined by taste. But Rava here has a new novel approach. Rava says you follow the shem ha'isser. So the Gemara's example that it used was wine, a fermented wine, yayin yashan, grape juice, freshly squeezed grapes, grape juice, and grapes. Now, what do we call those things? We call it yayin yashan, yayin chadash, and anavim. Now, everybody agrees that yayin yashan and anavim is called min b'she'eno mino because they taste different and they are called something different. The machlokes is over yayin yashan with yayin chadash, which taste different, but they're called yayin, and yayin chadash with grapes, which taste the same, but they're called two different things. So that was the machlokes Abaye and Rava. So now the Gemara on Samach Vav Amud Aleph, the Gemara gave a couple of other examples where this machlokas would have relevance. So it's six lines before the lines get wide on the Samach Vav Amud Aleph. Amar Abaye, mino. So Amar Abaye, mino aminala, debasar taima azlinan. How do I know that we follow ta'am for defining min b'mino and min b'shein amino versus shame. D'tanya, tavlin shnayim u'shlosha shemos v'heim min echad. Oh, min shlosha asurin u'mitzdarfin. I don't want to get bogged down in this machlokas Rashi and Tosfos what the meaning of shame is. For our purposes, I want to just take Rashi's approach and dealing with the first part of this braisa. The braisa says that if I have tavlin, which is two or three different shemos, but they are one min. What is this? So Rashi says, if I have white pepper and black pepper and long pepper, I don't know what that exactly long is as opposed to white and black, but different things, they're all called pepper, but they, on the surface, you would say they have a different ta'am, so they have one shame, but they are shlosha minim. So the braisa says they are mitzdarfim, they combine. So here it require a little bit of explanation. Supposing I have 59 kizasim of kosher meat, ground beef, let's say. And now I have one kizayis of nevela falls into this meat. And one kizayis of dam, of blood, falls into this meat. And it all gets blended together. Now, the question is, I have two kizayisim of isur that has fallen into 59 kizayisim of heter. So what is the din? So the halacha happens to be that it's mutar. Why? Because dam and the vela do not combine. They're different isurim. In this case, they're different substances physically too. And therefore, the kizayis of nevela combines with the 59 kizayisim of heter to be mevatel the dam, and the kizayis of dam combines with the 59 kizayisim of heter to be mevatel the kizayis of nevela. In other words, the question we ask is the dam batel or not in this mixture? The answer is, yes, it is, because there are 60 kizayisim keneged the dam. Is the nevela betela in this mixture? And the answer is yes, because there are 60 kizasim kenegel and nevela. If two kizasim of dam or two kizasim of nevela fell in, then it would be a totally different story. Then you would require 120 kizasim. But the isser here is mitzdar. This is quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, the end of the first siman in Hilchos Tarovis in Yeridah, the end of siman Tzadiches. And this is lemaisa. I mean, I hope this ever comes up. God forbid this ever come up in your kitchen. But in the isser is mitzdarif to the heter to be mevatel the other isser. So much so, this is a more complicated case. But the Gemara in Zvachim says that if you have a kazayis of chaylev and a kazayis of nosar and a kazayis of aro tame, and you blend them all together, you mix them together, and you eat it, you don't get malchus because each of the two isurim are mevatel the other. It's not mutter to eat. Make no mistake about it. But the other two kazayim, did I violate dam? Or no, sir. The answer is no, because the two kazesim of tame and whatever else, pigle, right? Are mevatel the kazayis of nosar, and the kazayis of nosar plus the kazayis of tame is mevatel the kazayis of pigle. So you couldn't actually get malchus for any of them, right? The isur ma mevatel nosar. So that's not a lemaisa case because you can't eat it anyway. But in our case, such an accident happen, you're allowed to actually eat it. Now, yes. No, go ahead, because I have to. The next part is this next step.
So here's the question. I mean, we have the tavlin and the gimel shema, right? But there are going to be boundary disputes whether you're talking about shema or whether you're talking about tam. So you could easily come up with the exact same fact pattern, but now do it with tam. There's always going to be subcategorization questions. So why is this a proof? Why is this kind of a proof analytically that either shema or tam is there? You could say, oh, there's a special kind of yayin that's
We're not there yet. We have to read the next line in the Gemara. But first, I have to explain one thing. You'll see what the Gemara's comment on it, the way it understands why they're mitzdarif, will answer that question, I think. But let me first just make one observation of a logical leap that the Gemara's making. What we have been talking about right now is one a substance falls into another. And how do you define that? Is that mimimino, mimbisheno mino? We're now talking about a different question, which may be conceptually analogous, but there is a leap being made here, which is, I told you that isurim are mevatlin zeseh. When is an isur not mevatel zeseh? And as if I have 59 kazaisim in my pot of heter, and one kazaisim and nevela and another kazaisim and nevela both fall in, we say that two kazaisim and nevela are mitzdarif to be two kazaisim, it's not one and one. Why? Because they're the same min. That's why. Now, so in this context, the Gemara is suggesting that taking just the first half, you have black pepper, white pepper, red pepper.
Actually, what if you had 60 categories of different traits that were not mitzaref? Could you actually make something kosher out of it entirely?
You should, in theory, that should work.
Correct.
There are some complicating factors, but in theory, it might work. You know, Marshall, that's your homework. I'm away for 3 weeks. So we have black, white, and red pepper. Let's say they have different taste, but they all are called pepper. Now, the Mishnah says, or the Braisa says, that they combine when they fall into the substance to make it usser. Now, why? Now, this is the crucial point. Now, when you look at that on its own terms, you would say that the fact that three things of a different shame are mitzdaref to be, in other words, three things of a different flavor but with the same shame are mitzdaref, that would suggest that basar shma is linan, that you follow the shame. Now that would have been a proof for Rava, except there's a very important qualification. That's what the Gemara now says the following. Ve'omer Chizkiya. And we're accepting Chizkiya's explanation of the Braisa as gospel truth. That's what the Gemara is assuming. You could debate Chizkiya, but this is what Chizkiya says, and the Gemara assumes this to be correct. The Amar Chizkiya hacha b'mine misika azlinon ho overroy lematek bohemes akedera. Would what did I say?
Azlinon.
Oh, askinon. I'm sorry. Ho overroy lematek bohemes akedera. In other words, these are three things that do the same, have the same function. These are all, forget pepper, the example of pepper. That was Rashi's example. But they're three things that all are sweeteners of kedera. They don't taste identical, but their function in the kedera is to do the same thing to the flavor in the pot, to food in the pot, which is to sweeten it. And therefore, even though their tam is not identical in one sense, you can distinguish between them, since their function of the tam is the same, Chizkiya says that's why they're mitzdarif. But, now, what does that imply? It implies that if the function of the tam were not the same, even though they were all of the same shame, that would not be mitzdarif. And if you say that they're not mitzdarif, what does that tell you about them? That they are called min b'she'eino mino. Because if they were min b'mino, they would combine. So the Gemara says, bishlama bas, iamers bishlama basar taima azlinon, then kulei chad taimahu. It would have been, it has to be chad tam. And Chizki is saying that's actually the reason here, that they are called chad tam, one taste. Ela I amris basar shma azlinan, hai shma lechod v'hai shma lechod.
Everybody
is. So if you're going to go basar shame, so the Gemara says, in a case where they all have the same function of being sweeteners, but they're different species. You have sugar and you have beets. Probably we call beet sugar, but okay. You have sugar and you have honey and you pick your third thing, whatever it is. If they were to combine, they have different shemos. They have the same functional tam and they're mitzdarif. But if it weren't for the same functional tam, they wouldn't be mitzdarif. And they have different shemos and yet they still are mitzdarif, which shows you that you don't follow shema. You follow Tom. Okay. Now the Gemara says, V'Rava, how does Rava deal with this Braisa? V'Rava Amar Lacha, Hamani Rabbi Meir Hi. Now, this Braisa is Rabbi Meir's opinion. Tatanya Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Mishum Rabbi Meir, Minayin Lachol Isurin Shebetor Shemitzdarfen Zezeh, Shenemar Lo Sochal Kol Toeva. So Rabbi Meir's opinion is different than what I told you earlier. Because my case of the one kezias of chelev, one kezias of dam, and the one kezias of nevela that falls into my 59 kezesim of heter, Rabbi Meir says it's asur. Eats all isurim. Doesn't matter if they taste different, if they have different shemos. All isurim are mitzdarfin zemzeh. And therefore, that's why all these tavlin are mitzdarfin. And the conclusion of the drasha is kol she'tiavti lecha harehu bebal tochal. Anything the Torah declared off limits is in the same bal tochal. It's all considered one iser. Now, there's only one detail then that has to be, Rashi points out here. Others disagree, but for our purposes, I think it's sufficient. What about Chizkiah's comment of they're mitzdarif only because they're roy lematik by mesakadera? They're all sweeteners. So if you take a look in Rashi, Dibra maschov a rava amar lecha hamani Rabbi Meirhi. It's about 12, 13 lines up from the end of Rashi. Rashi writes, "V'afal gav the lo shavu lo bishma v'lo b'taima kamar demitzdarfen." Rabbi Meir believes that you could have two substances that have a different shame, that have a different time, and they're still mitzdarif because Rabbi Meir holds all isurin are mitzdarfen. Now look at the last two words in Rashi, "Udechizkiyah leisa." In other words, Rav is rejecting Chizkiyah. Chizkiyah explained the Braisa that things are mitzdarif because the Roy Lamatek Pemasakiter, it's Mine Mesika. And Rav would say, no, I don't accept Chizkiyah's explanation of the Braisa. I would say the Braisa is dealing with any Isurim. It doesn't have to have any commonality. All Isurim, all Tavlin. It doesn't matter what type of Isur they're from, what type of species of Tavlin it is. It all combines because for Rabbi Meir's purposes, in the context, remember, this is not relevant to our discussion. It's only relevant in the context of Tzirif. Rabbi Meir says that for Tzirif purposes, all Isurim are one. Right? Rabbi Meir would not say that in our context. Rabbi Meir could hold like Rabba, he could hold like Abaye. He could say Basar Shmazlin and Basar Taimazlin. And when you're talking about Isur, falls into Heter. But if you're talking about Isur falls into Heter, but I should say Isurim fall into Heter, and you're trying to decide, is Isur Mitzdarif Zemzeh? So Rabbi Meir would say, all Isurim Mitzdarfin, so there's nothing to discuss.
Except the Tavlin is Dover Choref.
So let me make one comment just in this context. There is a principle in Yeridaya that you're alluding to, that when we talk about Shishin being Mevatel Isser, that's only if it's actually Mevatel Latam. If you have a Milsa Da'avido Latayma, you have something, a substance that is made for the purposes of flaring, it's not Batel B'Shishin. But it is, technically speaking, could be Batel. You just have to have much more of it. In other words, if you have a very powerful spice, you have pepper. Yeah, pepper viscer. So shishim maybe is probably, almost certainly, insufficient to be mevato pepper. But 1,000 probably could be mevato pepper, you know, or 2,000 could be mevato pepper. So it's just a larger shear.
But here they're using it specifically for that.
So
purpose.
What's
because
that?
It's to put in.
But I think the assumption of the Braisa is that if only one of the three, let's say for Chizkiyah, if only one of the three top pieces of Tavlin fell in, you wouldn't be able to taste it.
Right.
That would, I think, be the assumption for the moment. There is, by the way, one other. I won't talk about it now. We'll probably come back to this issue at some one point or another. So for the moment, let's just assume it's a case where, on its own, one of the tavlin wasn't enough to flavor it.
So why is Rava bringing down Rav
Meir? Oh, one second. Hold on. Yeah. Scratch that. That may be irrelevant here, actually, because this might be a case of. Is it Tarovis Mimimina? Okay, let's stick with that answer. There may be another way of dealing with it. Yeah, I'm sorry.
So Rav, it seems to me, is bringing down Rav Meir as a proof to his own. Why is he bringing down Rav Meir?
To deflect the Braisa.
That's what Rashi means. In other words, he's saying it's not like this.
Correct.
That's the point of Rav Meir. But
correct.
It's not a raya to Rav himself.
Correct.
But wouldn't it appear that there are now three deos? Because Rav Meir's Deah would seem to be, right, there's Tom, right, there's Shame. Now we have a new category called Isurin.
So not in, that. I made the observation before that the Gemara is making a leap from A fully into B, right. and which rules do you apply of the Shir Bittul based upon our A and B the same min? There's no reason to assume Rabbi Meir would disagree with that. He might hold like Abaye, he might hold like Rava. The Gemara made a leap from Tziruf. Now, our assumption was in order for two Isurim to be mitzdarfim and combined prohibit what they fall into, they have to be the same min. So in that context, there are three conceptual possibilities. You could say you follow Shame. You could say you follow Tam. You could say you don't care. But I would say the position you don't care, in effect, is not taking a position. It's saying that the whole question in the context of Tziruf is irrelevant, because there's no, because Tziruf automatically works. In other words, Rabbi Meir's position in the context of Tziruf is not that he picks a different criteria. It's not that you have Basar Shem, you have Basar Tam, and you have Basar Color. Rabbi Meir just says that by, when it comes to Isurim Mitztarfim Zemzeh, to Asar a third thing, everything, all Isurim are Mitztarfim. Okay. So this is the first part of the Gemara. Now the second part of the Gemara is what brings us into the discussion of Reach. And it's really almost in a weird way a tangent, because the Gemara is going to deal with the following question. I don't know if there are wine connoisseurs here. I don't know about this, but according to the Gemara, it is conceivable that you have wine that is what's called Reche Chala Vita'ame Chamra. It smells like vinegar, but it tastes like wine, which means it's in the process of starting to go off, but you don't quite taste it in the wine yet, but if you sniff it, you can tell already that it's on its way. So we call it Reche Chala Vita'ame Chamra. Its smell is vinegar, its taste is still wine. And the question is, how do you label this substance with an hour discussion? So there's going to be a machlokes between Abaye and Rava on this issue. So I'm going to wait on that issue because I want to first introduce the general concept of Reach and what is the role of Reach. Now, from a biological or a chemical perspective, perhaps better, so Recha, there is no such thing as Recha distinguished from time, as far as I understand. I once got the following shaila, which is a revelation when you teach Eridea, but and I answer a lot of Eridea shailas, but this was a new one to me. Someone had left some turkey open in the refrigerator, and then they also had some chocolate open. And then apparently the chocolate tasted like turkey. There was no physical contact. So I didn't know what quite to, now, you know, like, it, don't, one rule number one, I've been taught at least, is never leave a cut onion open in the fridge. Some things, now, so the question is, what's going on here? Now, from a chemical perspective, the only way smell works is by particles becoming airborne. So from a modern chemical perspective, it's very hard for me to envision explaining Tam and Reach being fundamentally different. But we're going to, now, and I, if I'm not mistaken, I asked for Shach, they said, yeah, it's a problem. Now, I don't know on what grounds the, you know, that was a case where somebody thought to claim they could taste the turkey when the, even though it didn't make physical contact. I don't know what the Gemara is talking about when it talks about Recha in terms of what do you sense if you have the other one. I'm going to assume, I'm not sure, but the Gemara is maybe not assuming that you sense anything when you taste it, but are you concerned maybe that you would? It's not entirely clear, but I'm going to live in the world of ignorance is bliss, and just going to assume that Recha and Taima are so fundamentally two different things. Okay, so let's at least approach, start with the Gemara that way, and at some point we could revisit.
We do have different smell receptors and taste receptors.
No, that's true.
Yeah. That one is not; it doesn't meet the threshold of to, you know, stimulate the taste receptor. If the particle's too small, you need a more sensitive receptor, like a smell receptor.
Okay, so that might actually explain. That makes sense. It might explain a particular question that the Rishonim grapple with. It's a machlokas. What is the din of Reach by chametz on Pesach? There's a comment. The Rif will state explicitly. You have a two-page handout, which I will probably we're not going to finish it today. So I'll probably, for those who don't, who can't be sure, you'll have it in 3 weeks from now, or 4 weeks from 4 weeks, I guess. I'll collect them. So on the back, you have the Rif, and the Rif makes a comment that clearly, Tam is much Reach is much less than Tam. The question is, though, is Reach considered Isser Mashehu? In other words, it's not enough to qualify in the shishim category, but it might be 1 in 1,000 or 1 in 2,000, and this is why you can smell it, but you can't taste it. In which case, it should in fact be asar on Pesach, which is the way we are machmir. But I think the Shulchan Aruch quotes two deos on this. Okay, but let's
have a relationship. I mean, we say by hegdish kol mar v'reach, right? Is not, you can't.
That's hanah. No, but that's a hanah question. I think we can all agree, even if you want to say that Recha is even not even a mashahu in terms of tam, there's still physical hana from the smell. So the question is, how do you, when you don't actually, you know, take the, that question is when I don't use the object directly, tangibly, but I'm sort of getting an offshoot, what's the status, what is the status of that? But that's a Hana question, not an Achila question. Okay. Yes, but the difference between Yayin Nesach and Hekdesh in a point that we once learned, I think the Rambam's Nekuda Neflah here. So I don't want to revisit that right now, but there are two kinds of Yisuri Hana in Halacha. One kind of Yisur Hana starts out as really fundamentally an Yisur Achila, but Achila is the quintessential Hana, and Hana kind of piggybacks on that. The Rambam claims that Basar B'Chalav is fundamentally that. The Basar B'Chalav is Nesar B'Achila, and the Hana piggybacks on that. The Rambam would say almost all Yisuri at Mahalas Asuris that are Asur Bahana, like Orla, Kilaya Karen probably also, all of which fundamentally start and Chametz also as Mahalas Asuros, as an Isra Achila, the Hana just piggybacks on the Achila. Hekdesh is different because Hekdesh is not fundamentally an Isra Achila. Achila is just one manifestation of Hana. Okay, so we're going to start, we're looking at the Gemara and Daf Ayin Vav Amid Beis, Imsachim. I left off Ayin Vav Amid Aleph. There are two words that are relevant there, which is Amar Rav. Okay, so you'll trust my memory Baal Peh, that the first two words of this sugya are Amar Rav. Amar Rav, Basar Shchuta Shamein, Shetzlo in Basar Nevela, the top of the page, Kachosh. If you have a person who roasts in an oven, juicy kosher meat with basar nevela kachosh, with very lean non-kosher meat, asr. In other words, you have, let's say, you're roasting it, the spit is, you know, suspended, you know, up down. So basically, they're next to one another, not close to touching. Okay? So it's going to be a question of the flavor, the smells that waft throughout the oven. Now, remember that in this case, if the kosher meat is the fat and juicy piece, and the non-kosher one is the lean piece, one would think that it is much more likely that the kosher is going to flavor the non-kosher, rather than the non-kosher is going to flavor the kosher. But Rav says, nonetheless, it's asur, mai taima mifatmei mehadadi, that they basically exchange flavors, that once the fat is floating around the oven, it goes back and forth and picks up flavor from the vela and transmits it to the kshera. Vilevi Amar, Afilu Basar Shchuta Kachush, Shetzla'u in Basar Nevela Shamein, is Mutar. Levi says that even in the reverse, where the treif meat is the fat and juicy meat, and the kosher meat is this Basar Kachush, nonetheless, it's permitted. And why? By Taima, Recha Ba'almahu, Verecha Lav Milsai. Now, one comment just to make here. I cannot find this in Rashi. I looked over Rashi three times, and maybe I'm just being blind as a bat. But Tosfos attributes to Rashi the position that Recha Lav Milsa is only B'di'evet, which means that you're not allowed to cook the Basar Klusha and the Basar Shmena at the same time in the oven. But it means that if you did, it doesn't make the kosher meat Asr. Now,
Rashi according to Levi or Rashi
Lahalacha? Rashi according to Levi. He happens to be Paskins like Levi also. We'll get to that. So Machlokas Rishon had a Paskin. But right now it appears we have a Machlokas, Rav and Levi, with a Recha Milsa or Recha Lav Milsa. Does Recha count? Does it make an impact in making something else, or does it not? Now if you think about why immediately just one obvious nafkamina that emerges from this, and very, very much Halacha Lamaisa, is if an oven is clean, is an oven ever treif? Meaning, if I b'di'eved, if cooking the treif meat and the kosher meat at the same time in one oven, okay, b'di'eved the meat is okay, then certainly if I'm cooking, I've cooked the nevela meat, and now subsequently I cook the kosher meat, there's no way that cooking the kosher meat can make the kosher meat asr. And arguably, in many circumstances, by definition, that would be called b'di'eved, right? If you were to go to a place and you rent a lodge or something, and there's an oven there, and the question is, can I use the oven? Because who knows what the person in there preceding me who rented it previously used it. Now, if you hold that recha lav milsahi, the answer is probably yes. Anyway, we'll eventually come to the Shulchan Aruch. But obviously the other much more relevant everyday case would be, what if I have one oven and I want to use it for milk and I want to use it for meat. Mm-hmm. So presumably, to cook the two at the same time in the oven would be, even if you paskin like Levi, would be prohibited because recha la milsehi b'di'evah, but l'chatchila, you're not allowed to do that. But if you hold that recha milsehi, then it doesn't mean it is a osur, but it means at least you could entertain the question of whether or not you need a separate oven for meat and a separate oven for milk. Okay, spoiler alert, just so I don't get anybody too upset here or worried. The Shulchan Aruch's psak and my Rebbe's psak, and you know, I don't think it's a chiddush, even the Ramosha said otherwise, is you don't need two ovens, separate ovens for milk and meat. Recha milsahi lachatchilas, therefore you don't cook them at the same time, but if you let the oven cool down, or I would say air out, in between, you know, for a little bit between cooking the milk and cooking the meat, you should never have to worry.
Okay? That's only true of ovens of a certain size. You can't have a toaster oven.
So let me put it to you this way. I agree with you, not so clear. I think it's a terrible idea to even try that. But the reason why, let's wait till we get to Halacha Maaseh, but let's talk about regular ovens. I think a toaster oven is a terrible idea for another reason, because the odds are you have be'en in there as well. And if you have stuff actually in there, those are your pieces that fell in or something like that, then it's much more problematic. Because then, if you have, let's say, milchiks that's, you know, dripped onto the oven, or fleishiks, and now you're cooking the other thing, then that's like cooking the two at the same time, so at least l'chatchila it's asur. But assuming that you don't have, you know, edible stuff on the bottom of your oven, so then that shouldn't be a problem. A toaster oven is more complicated. It's more likely to have stuff in it. There is another consideration as well, the size of the oven, but let's wait till we get to that. It's going to take a little time. We're going to be on Recha for a while, not just because I'm going away. Okay, so now the Gemara says, "Have Ovid Levi Uvda Bebeish Galusa Begdi V'Dahar Acher." Levi was Paskin Lemaisa Ovid Uvda in a case that happened in Reish Galusa. Remember the Reish Galusa had Avodim who weren't so frum. I'm not clear if all of them were Jewish, but you know, it's not a new phenomenon where in the centers of power you have some shady individuals around them. So this was the equivalent back then. The Avdei de Beirish Galusa were not a very good bunch. I don't mean just mean to being, you know, frumkite per se, but they were thugs also, it would seem. So there was a story that happened is that in the Beirish Galusa, in the oven, somebody cooked a gedi, you know, goat meat, and pig meat at the same time. Davar acher. Chazal don't like to use the term chazir. So they cooked it at the same time, and Levi Paskin that it was better to eat the kosher meat. That's not a chachap. If he had Paskin was a way to eat the davar acher, that would have been impressive. I'm kidding. But okay, so now the Gemara says the following. Meisvei. Ein solen shnei psachim ke'echad mipnei hatarovis. You're not allowed to roast two ovens together, two psachim together, two carbon pesachs together in the same oven because of taroves, because of mixtures. Now, first a word to understand what's going on here. One of the restrictions of carbon pesach is that the only person or people who are allowed to eat from a carbon pesach are those who are menuyim, those who are already counted in the group on that pesach. Now, which means I can have two carbon, and they're only allowed to be mamuna on one carbon pesach. This was yesterday's parsha. Now, that means that even though this carbon pesach is mutter to eat, and this carbon pesach is mutter to eat, if flavor gets from one to the other, nobody can eat them, because when I'm eating from my carbon pesach, I'm also eating part of your carbon pesach. So the Braisa says that you're not allowed to roast two carbonos pesach, which means by definition, one group can eat this and not the other, and vice versa, in the same oven because of the mixture of tarovis, because of mixture.
Why can't you just increase the group size?
What's that?
Why can't you just increase the group size?
But that won't help you because you can only be on one pesach. So I can transfer my carbon pesach into your pesach. We could even make a bigger group on one carbon pesach, but can only be on one animal. It can't be on two animals. One animal, yes.
Got it.
Yes. So the Gemara says the following. Vikasha, my love, isn't this mixture, the taroves that you're concerned about mixing, taroves tamen, vikasha lelevi. It proves that Levi's wrong, that Recha really is milsa. So the Gemara says, no, lo, mipnei taroves gufin. We're afraid that they're going to mix the two goats up, and group A is going to take group B's goat, and group B is going to take group A's goat. Okay, so now the Gemara continues. and says Hachi Nami Mistaber, that would appear to be the correct meaning. Midiktoni Seifa Afilu Gedi Utle, even a goat and a sheep. In other words, you can make bring a carbon pesach from A's or keves. So even if you have one group has a goat and one group has a sheep, you're still not allowed to roast them in the oven. Now, in other words, why would you have thought it would be any different if it's about mixing of flavors? If it's about the mixing of the two up, you would have said, you know, to roast the gedi and a tle, nobody's going to make that mistake. So the price is saying, we're so concerned that if people mixing up, one group's going to take the goat when they were supposed to take the sheep, and one group will take the sheep when they were supposed to take the goat. So elamai al karchach mnei taroves gufen hu da aser aval taroves tavim shari. So now you can make the other inference: the fact that the Bryce is only concerned about mixing up the gufim, not mixing up the flavors. You can prove that in fact Levi is right, and it will be leve teve tufta de Rav. Maybe it will be a raya against Rav. So the Gemara answers, Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah, hacha b'mayas kinan kigon shetzla'o b'shtei kederos. No, you roasted each one in its own pot, and so therefore there will be no exchange of flavors. Now, what this tells you, now I know some of you are going to be jumping down and say, this is ridiculous, this can't possibly be true, but what this does tell you, by the way, is that the concern of Reach doesn't exist when one food is in a pot. It's only when it's being roasted open. That's what the Gemara implies, and this will be quoted in one form or another in the Mishonim and Shulchan Aruch. But there's a much larger problem here, of course, which is, how do you cook a Karban Pesach in a pot? The Gemara says, "B'shtei kederos salgadaitach." You're not allowed to cook a meat in a pot. That's called bishul because the liquid comes out and it stews in its own liquid. And that Torah says, "Al tochlu mimenu na uvashel mevushal b'mayim." It can't be cooked in anything, any liquids. So therefore, it can't be cooked in a kederos. So the Gemara says, "No." What we meant by that answer is ela ema kein shtei kederos. In other words, if you had an oven with a partition in between, or you piled the coals up in the middle of the oven, and each Pesach was on one side and the other. So in this case, there is no concern about the transfer of flavor, but it's still a concern you might get mixed up whose Pesach is which, and that's why the Braisa says you're not allowed to do that. But this, therefore, tells you nothing one way or the other about the Machlokas Rav and Levi. It's not a proof against Levi, but it's not a proof against Rav either. Okay. So now the Gemara just now formulates what is the price of a hachi kamar. Ain't solon shnei psachim ke'achar mnei taroves. My taroves, this is the way Rav would say it, taroves tamim. Va'afilu ke'ain shtei kederos taleka taroves tamim, asr mishrim taroves gufim, va'afilu gedi utle. So this is just the way Rav, this is not the way Levi would read the Braisa. Levi would leave the Braisa as is. But Rav would say that you have to explain the Braisa in the fashion that we just read. Okay. Now the Gemara says the following. Amar Rav Mari, Kitanoi, is not the Machlokas about whether Recha Milsa, Recha La Milsa, the Machlokas Rav and Levi, is that not in fact, and maybe suggesting it is, a machlokas atanaim. In other words, this is not new to the Amoraim. The Tanaim already disputed this issue. Which is, harodeh, it's a mishnah in Trumos, harodeh paschama. If someone removes hot bread from the oven, unesana al pi chavis yayin shel truma, and you put it on top of a barrel of wine, which is truma. Rabbi Meir Oser, Rabbi Meir says a non-Kohen is not allowed to consume the bread. Rabbi Yehuda Matir, Rabbi Yehuda says he can. Rabbi Yose matir b'shochitim v'oser b'shel sa'orim m'pnei sha'sa'orim shoavos. Rabbi Yose permits with wheat bread, but he prohibits if the bread was made out of barley, because barley absorbs, it draws the wine up to it. That's what the Mishnah says. So my love, tanoihi. What are the Tanaim arguing about? The same thing. The Mar Savar, that Rabbi Huda holds, Recha la milsahi. Umar Savar, Rabbi Meir says, Recha milsahi. So Rabbi Meir says, a non-Kohen can't eat the bread. Rabbi Huda says, a non-Kohen can't eat the bread. So the Gemara says, now again, this could be true. The Gemara says, the Levi vadai tanoihi. Levi, for sure, there's no way Levi could explain this Mishnah without saying that Rabbi Meir holds Recha Milsahi and is a problem. But the Gemara says, L'Rav Neima Tanoihi? Does Rav have to say also it's a Machlokas Tanoim? And Rabbi Yehuda holds that Recha La Milsa? So the Gemara says, no. Amar Lecha Rav could say to you, D'Chulei Alma Recha Milsahi. Everybody holds like me. Lav itmar Allah. But have we not said in reference to that Mishnah, Dahi, Amar Rabba Bar Chana Amar Reish Lakish? Reish Lakish made the following qualification in the Mishnah. B'pascha amav v'chaves pesucha, if the bread is hot and the barrel is open, the top is off. So then, divrei akol aser. Everybody agrees it's aser. Why? Because reicha milsahi. B'pas sonenes v'chaves megufa, if the bread is cold, meaning you didn't just take it out of the oven. If the bread is cold and the barrel is covered, divrei akol mutar. Lo nechalku ela b'pascha amav v'chaves chasuma. They argue only if you have chad l'reisa, we would say. One negative factor. Either the bread is hot, or that the wine barrel is open. V'hanami, and that's the case where they debate whether or not stuff gets through the cover, whether or not when it's cold, whether it absorbs any of the reah. And what's our case? V'hanami, our case of the nevela and the ksheira is kipascha b'vachamis psucha damya. The stuff is hot. There's no barrier in between them, and therefore all the tanaim would agree that reicha milsahi, and it would be a problem. Thus, Rab could explain that the Mishnah is not about reicha milsahi, but rather everybody holds reicha milsahi. Reach is a problem, but the only case where Rabbi Yehuda disagrees is a case where reach is not actually there. There's no reach. The Gemara continues, Tani Rav Kahana Berei de Rav Chinina Saba, Pasha Afa in Tzli B'tanur, Asur La'ochla B'kutcha. He says that if you bake bread in an oven, now we spoke about this already last week, with meat, you're not allowed to eat the bread with milk. Kutcha was a kind of a milk dip, sour milk dip. That's one story. Now, what does this story that the Gemara is quoting, this Masa, imply? What does it tell us? Notice, we had a Machlokas, Rav and Levi. They laid out the Machlokas. Then the Gemara quotes a Brisa about the two Psachim together, which initially looks like Rav, then the Gemara says, no, it really looks like Levi, and Rav can get around it. Then the Gemara quotes the Mishnah and Trumos to suggest that it could be a Machlokas Tanaim, Rav and Levi. Rav could say, everybody agrees with me, but Levi would certainly say it's a Machlokas Tanaim. Now the Gemara closes with two stories. So we just read one story. The story was somebody cooked bread in an oven with meat. Not the bread on the meat, you're not allowed to make fleshik bread, but you cook the two in the oven at the same time. And somebody, when Amora, Rav Ami Parzikya, declared it prohibited to eat that meat with milk. You can eat the meat.
The bread.
Yes, thank you. To eat the bread with milk. But you can eat the bread. It's not like you made fleshik bread or milchik bread. You can eat the bread, but you can't eat it with milk. So, how would you explain Rav Ami Parzikya's position? What does he hold? What would you say? Reicha milsahi. That's what you would say. Okay. The Gemara tells another story, which is important for other reasons as well. Hahi binisa. There was a fish. The itava. Bahade bisra. Itava means to be roasted. Tzvi is the translation of tzli. Bahade bisra. The fish was cooked with milk. With meat. Asra rava mi parzikya lemechla bekutcha. He prohibited eating the fish with milk, like the bread case. Again, same reason, presumably. Recha milsahi. Then the Gemara says, Mar baravashi amar, afilu bimilcha nami asur. You can't even eat the fish with salt. I mean, you can't eat it at all. Mishum dekashya l'recha l'davar acher. Apparently, it was bad. It was a sakana. Davar acher here does not mean what davar acher meant earlier. Davar acher here means taras. This is the origin, in case you're wondering, of the practice of not consuming fish and meat together. This is the source. You look puzzled, Marshall. Which means it's not just eating them together, it means if they were roasted in the same oven, you're not allowed to eat the fish. Rabbi Parzikya said you can't eat the fish with milk, because it's fleshik or quasi-fleshik. Mar Baravashi said you're not allowed to eat the fish at all,
because
it's dangerous.
What does that even mean?
Sakana.
People don't eat fish. Most, not all. Dangerous. Some of us, in principle, are different, although I never, practically speaking, eat meat with fish because it just doesn't come up. But lots and lots of from Jews will not eat fish with meat. They switch words for that reason. In fact, Sfardim, based upon an errant girsa somewhere in the Shulchan Aruch, I think, or the Beis Yosef, won't eat fish with milk either. But the Gemara is fish with meat. Marshall.
I assume that having meat fill the bread the way that many Central Asian Jewish communities do, is mutter.
Correct.
It looks like regular lechem that turns out it's secretly like shekel.
Correct, correct. If there's a simen in the bread, nobody says you can't eat pizza, yeah, because after all, it's milk and bread.
Okay. Number two, I had always thought, and I guess I never really learned it through, that the reasons that you couldn't have fish with meat were sakana, the two different sakana. One, that they used melach stung to cure fish, and there was a concern about you would forget and touch your eyes and go blind, so you had to sort of clear all the cutlery. The second was, I thought there was a sugya somewhere about the little bones in the fish.
I might jokingly say, I believe, I don't want to tell you no one's ever said that or written that, but that's probably from Maseches Bava Maaseh. this is the Gemara. This is the Gemara. The Rambam doesn't even quote this Gemara.
So
he probably
actually nonsense.
The scientific basis is non-existent. I don't want to dwell at length, and I don't want to make trouble for anybody. The Rambam doesn't even quote the din. It doesn't appear in the Mishneh Torah. The Shulchan Aruch does quote it in the siman in Yoredeya that deals with sakana. It's after Hilchos Tarov. It's a few simanim later. It's either siman Kuf Tezayin or Kuf Yud Zayin. You can see that's where it's quoted. There are people who go crazy about this. There is a Tshuva the Chasam Sofer where he says Havu de Lolosev. In other words, he's not convinced. He doesn't say it's mutter deemed to fish, but he's already suspicious about it and says don't go looking for more chumras in this. But if you asked me, I said I don't normally eat meat with fish because it just doesn't come up. I personally would not be makbid. I assume that dinim that are based upon dine sakana that are based upon scientific errors are not binding. In the same way, there may be other reasons. We drink liquids that are left uncovered, mayim galuyim, right? We're not worried anymore because. So, and I put it in the same category. They're both quoted in Shulchan Aruch, but on Giloy, the Mechaber says, not a problem. We do it because Nechashanam Mitzume Neinu, but he doesn't, fish and meat was still fish and meat. So yes, this is the source. Okay. Yes.
I want to point out that when I was in Montreal, the VOD there was very much, they would put up signs. Because they know who is, people might not be observant, that you have to eat the gefilte fish.
The OU, I don't know if they still do, but they used to be the Worcestershire source, it said OU fish on it.
Yeah, that's
so we're also not makbid in most of us, Amaya Machronim.
No, but is the makhor for that?
Yes. My Machronim is based upon Melech Stomis. I could see, by the way, just because Mar Bar Avashi said, Osir le'echlo afila b'milcha, why someone could have crossed wires in their brain and said, it's milk. But he's saying, Ravim Parsik said, you can't eat the meat with, you can't eat the fish with milk. And he says, you can't eat it with salt, meaning it means you can't eat it parv. I don't think it has anything to do with Melech Stomis. Yeah, so my Machronim, the Gemara says, is because of Melech Stomis. But this is the makar for not eating fish with meat. And this is the, this is the only makar in Shas for such a thing. Okay. Now, so let's get off the fish and meat thing. And let's just focus in on the Recha question. What would you say the conclusion of this Gemara is? How do we paskin? We have a machlokas rav and leib, but we have one brisa kind of points in one direction. We have another brisa that points in the other, more easily towards rav. And then we have some stories. So you paskin, recha milsahi, because of maisa rav. There's Levi did what he did. Levi did, Ovid Uvda, it's true, but Levi was following his own position. You don't necessarily bring a raya. The only proof you can bring from the fact that Levi did halacha lemaisa, his own shita, is that he really believed it. It wasn't just a svara be'alma. He had this idea in the Beis Medrash, but he wasn't really willing to rely upon it. No, Levi really held it without a question. The question really is, but Rav mi parzikya, so he, and Mar Bar Avashi doesn't disagree, he's just more mocked me by the fish case, so they seem to be assuming like Rav. In which case, the conclusion one might walk away from our sugya, imsachem, is that recha milsahi. And in fact, Rashi, who does not paskin that way, does understand that the Gemara does imply in these stories that recha milsahi. If you look in Rashi, on the first wide line in the Rashi's, asra rava mi parzikya lemech lebekutcha, sheyesh bo chalav, kutach is a sour milk dip, mishum de kosavar recha milsahi. Nes Ravami Parzikya held like Rav. Now, why then might we not paskin like Rav? What basis would we paskin like Levi? So the answer to that question lies in our sugya. I'm not going to read the Gemara. Well, I guess I'm going to skip a few lines just for a moment. Skip to the fifth line on Samach Vav Amud Beis. The last two words on the line, Bas Tiha. What is Bas Tiha? We'll discuss, God willing, several weeks from now when we get there. It has something to do with smelling the wine in a barrel to determine whether it's good or not good. Bas Tiha, Oved Kochamim, the Yisrael Shaper Dami. A guy smelling the Jew's barrel of wine, not worried about. But Yisrael, but the Oved Kochamim, a Jew smelling the guy's wine, Abaye Amar Aser, Rava Amar Mutar. Abaye Amar Aser, Recha Milsahi. Rava Amar Mutar, Recha Lav Milsahi. That's enough for our purposes. We have a machlokas of Abaye and Rava in the case of Bas Tiha, some smell case, whatever that exactly is, where Abaye says Recha Milsahi and Rava says Recha Lav Milsahi. Now we have a rule that throughout Shas, whenever there's a machlokas Abaye and Rava, Hilchasa Kirava, except by the Yal Kagam, the six cases, and this is not one of the Yal Kagams. We know there's a debate about one or two of them, but this is not in the category. So which case, by Bas Tiha, we paskin like Rava, that's Recha Lav Milsahi. So now, you come back to Pesachim and say, okay, well, we have Machlokas, Rav and Levi. We don't have a klal in Pesach, that Rav and Levi, Hilchasa Karav, Hilchasa Kalevi. We might sometimes paskin like Rav, we might sometimes paskin like Levi. So, the number of the Rishonim are going to say, since we know we paskin like Rav against Abaye, therefore we know we paskin like Levi against Rav. Adrian? So, you could have joined with the Balei Hatosos, who are in Samach Vav Amud Beis, we will eventually get to, who argue that there are different kinds of Reach. And therefore, the fact that Abaye and Rava have a dispute about this type of Reach does not necessarily mean that their dispute applies in the other kind of Reach. Tosos will say that both Abaye and Rava here could hold either like Rav or like Levi. In other words, the two issues, the Gemara uses the same term, Recha Milsahi, Recha Lav Milsahi, but they're talking about two different kinds of Rechas. So the question, the only thing you have to be able to establish, and that would of course depend upon what is Bas Tiha something that's more likely to be Aser or less likely to be Aser? I might even argue that Bas Tiha, if it means, and you have to figure out what the Iser is also, it's not, you're not drinking or tasting the food, you're smelling it, so is that Recha Milsi? Well, I would argue that's a direct Hana of smell, as opposed to two things roasted together where there's like a little bit of a kind of an echo of a flavor and so on. But what you said is what the Balei Tosfos are going to say. Because we're going to read one more Rashi now. We'll read the Rashi in Tosfos here in Pesachim. But that, in effect, is going to be a major machlokas harishonim. Whether to assume that the Recha Milsa in these two different sugyos are to be treated as identical, or, in fact, you can distinguish between the two. And that obviously has enormous implications for Pesach. Marshall. No.
Just give me one more second. We've all spent like our entire lives at buffets, like using nine different plates.
Speak for yourself. Yes.
This is being videotaped today, by the way.
Why is it?
It's always on audio anyway.
Over the last 3,000 years, that in other places where there was an unotherwise justified flat statement of sakana, that we know is truly no longer true today, and frankly, uncovered water is much more likely to actually be a sakana than an unsupported mixing of fish and meat on one page of something with nothing further about it. Why is it, Lemaisa, that this didn't develop out of halacha the way other arguably irrational?
So I'm going to answer this in a really one paragraph or less response, part of a broader discussion, which is the following. Historically, you can ask historians why Jews stopped observing Giloy but kept observing fish and meat. The reason why the Shulchan Aruch paskins one as mutter is because the minhag already became that way. In other words, the Shulchan Aruch, I have posited a category of dinei sakana. Following my Rebbe a little bit, the dinei sakana are different. They're not bichlal davar shebeminyan, that you require a minyan achratir. It's not like a gzeir of the Sanhedrin, you require another formal Sanhedrin. But the Shulchan Aruch is not working with that assumption. The Shulchan Aruch says that gilui is mutter because Jews were doing that. And whereas they weren't doing fish with meat. That's the only rhyme or reason on a historical level, I think, to distinguish between the two. That's all. Okay.
But Jews do matter.
So, coming back to our issue, let's just take a look at Rashi on the last Rashi before the lines get wide. Imsachim. Amar lecha rab, the chule alma recha milsa. V'taima de Rabbi Yehuda. Let's actually skip in the Rashi. Let's skip to the fourth line. The afal gav, the kaimei tanoi kivasei de rab. Even though the tanoim here, at least Rabbi Meir for sure, and maybe Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yosei, even though they hold like rab, hilchasa kivasei de Levi. We paskin like Levi, says Rashi. The hot ifligu be'abai v'rava gabe bastia b'meseches avodah zarah. They have the same machlokas, Rashi says, in avodah zarah. The kamle rava b'shitasa de Levi v'amar rechalav milsehi. We know that rava holds rechalav milsehi v'abai v'rava hilchasa karava. And Rashi says v'chenu b'tshuva sagaon v'af mishno sh'Rabbi Lazar Rabbi Lezer ben Yitzchak nemar li de lo chayishlan. He does not choshesh for rav. Sam?
We have asher rava.
That's a different Rava Miparzikya. He's identified as Rava Miparzikya because he's not regular Rava. It's Rava the Braid Rabbi Yosef Rahama, who's almost always identified as just Rava.
What I didn't catch what Rashi said one more time.
So Rashi said, even though the Tanoim here, Rabbi Meir for sure, holds like Recha Milsehi, and Rav was even able to explain Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yosef is following his own sheet. That's not compelling, but it's possible. So you should, by that token, you should pass like Rav, because the weight of the Tanaim leans towards Rav. Nonetheless, Rashi says we paskin like Levi, because in Avodah Zarah, Rav and Abaye have that machlokes, and Rav is holding like Levi there, and we know Abaye and Rav Lahal has always like Rav, except for the Al-Kagam, and therefore we paskin like Rav, and therefore we paskin like Levi, because they're the same position. If you look at the third Tosfos on the page, Asra Rava mi Parzikya, Mikan Posek Rabbeinu Tam Kirav. Based upon the stories in the Gemara, that they're just the conclusion of the Sugya, are stories that are following the Shita of Rav, we pass them that way. It's what we would call Masa Rav. Rav and Masa Rav is not literally that Rav, but Masa Rav means when that's the accepted practice. But for Rava Nami the Shari Bastiha. But what about Rava and Meseches Avodah Zarah, who permits Bastiha because he holds Recha Lav Milsehi? Rava also Matzi Savar Kavase. He could also hold like Rav. Visham Mefurash. There in Tosos and Avodah Zarah will be explained the different kinds of Reach and why the different Gemara, the two Gemaras, are not talking about the same thing. And you can have all sorts of multiple layers of Reach, and people could adopt different positions in different sugyos. Okay, so that now. I'll stop here. I'll just make one more comment, which is, there's another way of reading the Maskan of the Gemara, which is that of the position of the Rif, which we will save for the next year, in 4 weeks, in that you may remember last week I mentioned to you that the Rif holds, even though if you cook milchiks and fleishiks in the same oven at the same time, it's mutter to eat both, but if you cooked bread with meat in the oven at the same time, the Rif says you're not allowed to eat that bread with milk, like Rava Miparzikya. And the question is, how can that be? In other words, if the Rif paskins that Recha Lav Milsehi, and if you cook kosher and treif, or milk and meat in the same time, in the same oven, that it's mutter to eat them both, how can it be also to eat the bread? But obviously, he's paskining like Levi, which means he understands that these stories don't disagree with Levi. They're not Maaseh Rav. In accordance with Rav, these stories could fit even with Levi. We explained a little bit last time, but we're going to come and read the Rif, God willing, in a month from now.